Louisiana Community Health Outreach Network, a local professional group for community health workers. Dr. Wetterstrom has worked on several community academic partner programs and research projects in New Orleans that have focused on mental health, workforce development, chronic disease, and intimate partner violence. Benjamin Springgate is an associate professor of public health and clinical medicine at the LSU School of Public Health and the LSU School of Medicine. His interests include community partner participatory research, improving quality of care for vulnerable populations, and the integration of medical and public health education. He's completed medical school, public health training, and residency in Tulane, and was a UCLA Robert Wood Johnson Clinical Scholar. Please welcome them both.
Thank you. It's great to have the opportunity to participate in this panel with you all today. And we're going to talk a bit about some of our experience in the post-Katrina environment here in New Orleans. As you all are familiar by now, 9 years ago in September or late August and ongoingly thereafter, we experienced our own disaster, for which many of the concepts that are being discussed today in the theoretical level or at the 50,000-foot level were relevant and valuable. So we're going to review some of our experiences in trying to address some of these concerns and then talk a bit more about some of the ways that we've moved forward since then. We don't have any particular financial relationships to disclose at this time. This is, while it's a bit difficult to see from behind, one of the community resilience models that we thought a bit about as we were trying to develop programming to help the community recover from the Katrina disaster and the Rita experience that came shortly thereafter was a model from Fran Norris, which focused on a lot of the things we've already heard about from the theoretical models that were discussed in two initial presentations. Part of it was developing information and communication, economic development, building social capital, and community competence. And so we hoped that our efforts at community programming helped to reinforce some of these components of this resilience framework as we move forward. In our initial post-disaster work, one of the emergent health concerns that came out for community members in South Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast was the high burden of mental illness. As many as a third experienced symptoms of mental distress following Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. While facing, a rising burden of psychological distress, many of those individuals and organizations that once would have helped the community recover from these types of stressors were suddenly displaced or destroyed. And so that makes recovery and beginning to bounce back or to be resilient that much more difficult, as you can appreciate. So providers were displaced in some communities. One hospital out of 10 might have been remaining. Number of social workers, counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, primary care providers were greatly diminished in many areas for several years to come. And in particular, the access to specialty mental health. So already in our community, we have a shortage of specialty mental health providers in most environments, as you can appreciate. And so if suddenly, all the specialty mental health providers no longer have a home to work in or an office to work in, and everyone that they know or all of their prior patients and their families are suddenly experiencing the greatest stressor that they've ever had in their life, then it becomes a challenge to figure out how to address this emerging population health concern. Shortly in the first year following Katrina, a number of community and academic organizations came together to develop a partnership known as Reach NOLA. I was at the time a clinical scholar at UCLA, but had come back here to New Orleans to work on developing disaster recovery programs with some of my academic and community partners. And we worked with neighborhood associations in the Lower Ninth Ward, with faith-based organizations in the Treme and in Central City, with a number of community organizations in the disaster-impacted areas and that otherwise were already beginning to try to serve vulnerable populations, and developed an agenda for action to hopefully begin to address some of these challenges, one of which was to try to increase access to mental health services for the underserved. We recognized that in so doing, that if we wanted to be able to try to support people's recoveries, we couldn't go back to sort of the standard of care that exists in most communities around the country, which frequently does not include use of evidence-based practices. If we wanted to get the bang for the buck, we wanted to try to employ models of care that were going to be as effective as possible. And the partners determined that raising funds to enhance services delivery, implementing models of care across agencies, and leveraging diverse resources were going to be particularly important to try to address. So we worked with neighborhood non-governmental organizations that were trusted in the neighborhoods that were beginning to recover, and among the people who are trying to rebuild their businesses, rebuild their houses, rebuild their schools. And we're in a position to recognize the need of the community members entrusted for mental health engagement and outreach. We relied on partners both at RAND and UCLA, as well as the University of Washington, who had developed models of care for working with primary care settings and primary care providers to deliver highly effective depression care, care for anxiety, care for mood disorders, and then work to try to help the primary care and mental health clinics begin to regroup in ways that perhaps they hadn't been organized before. And our partnership to do all of this was really grounded, although our efforts were not research specifically, they were really more implementation programs with support of foundations, utilized models of trust building based in community-based and community-partnered participatory research with shared decision-making, organization of the recovery committees and councils was really based on ensuring that everyone had a voice at the table, and that, of course, is particularly valuable and important in a post-disaster environment. The initial goal for our efforts, which included training and delivery of services to improve care for depression for these 30-plus percent of the population who was experiencing mental health distress, focused on depression care. The providers felt like this might be something that was achievable. It was highly prevalent at the time. And while there was comorbidity with post-traumatic stress disorder, some of the service delivery challenges associated with caring for post-traumatic stress were beyond the capacity of the community at the time.
All right, so to give you a little bit more information about some of the specific work that we did, we began a program that we called the Mental Health Infrastructure and Training Project, or MHIT for short. Basically, the way it was structured was that community organizations received funds to hire direct service providers, and those included counselors, social workers, psychiatrists, and community health workers. And over the course of 7 large group training sessions in 2 years, we trained about 400 participants from various partner agencies on the project and other agencies within New Orleans and the surrounding parishes in how to improve their service delivery models. So all providers receive training in the collaborative care model, which is an evidence-based treatment for depression. I'll talk a little bit about more in a second. But basically the idea is that we integrate primary care, mental health specialty care, and community resources all together to really improve the efficacy of depression care. So in addition to training all of these different provider types, as the therapists, the psychiatrists, the PCPs, and community health workers in the collaborative care model, we also offered some profession-specific training that was relevant to the daily activities that a given profession might be doing. So specifically, primary care providers learn how to do screening and medication management in a primary care setting. Counselors and social workers learned about problem-solving treatment and cognitive behavioral therapy, again, both of which are evidence-based treatments for depression. And they also received implementation support for that, so it wasn't as if they just showed up at a training one day and we sent them away and left them to their own devices. We provided ongoing case consultation support for those who were interested in receiving that. And then the other piece of our program, which was a really novel approach and what I found was the most exciting, I was most passionate about, was our community health worker training program. So community health workers generally are folks who are members of the communities that they serve. They usually are incredibly well-trusted and well-known in their communities. So we found folks who were already acting as CHWs, either formally or informally, in their communities. And we partnered with them to develop a unique curriculum that was focused on how to do outreach, education, screening, and referrals for mental health, and then we offered them monthly support meetings to sort of follow up with them, see how they were doing with implementing the model. But the idea behind this was that we really wanted to build capacity of people who are already trusted within the community to deal with mental health. So what we've seen since the end of our program, which actually ended in 2002, is that we've seen some real uptake of the collaborative care model. Here's a little illustration of it, but you get the idea that basically it's the patient, primary care providers, depression care managers, psychiatrists sort of all working together, with that depression care manager often being a community health worker, and that person sort of serves as a liaison between the patient and the primary care team to support adherence, case management, kind of monitor progress. So specifically, this is an example of a primary care team that's working, or a collaborative care team that's working at Tulane Community Health Center, where we have a care manager who's also a community health worker working with a social worker, a primary care provider, and a psychiatrist all sort of working together. Now, one really interesting outcome that we have seen from this is that our community health worker, who's a lovely woman named Angie Kirkland, has started individual support groups she individually, as opposed to with a primary care provider or with a psychiatrist, is running the support groups herself. So this community health worker has gotten enough capacity that she now can deliver sort of peer support groups for folks who are suffering with ongoing mental disorders. That's very exciting. Another thing that we have seen come out of this project is that when we were doing our training program for community health workers, we got a lot of feedback that, hey, we like having training for CHWs. Is there anything else like this in the community? And we said, well, no, unfortunately there isn't. We actually did a survey of all the local CHWs and their employers that we could find, and surveyed them about their interest in training, and we were able to use the results of the survey to leverage some funding. So we developed a comprehensive community health worker training program that now exists in New Orleans and has been used to train about 80 CHWs, it's an 80-hour curriculum, been used to train about 50 people in New Orleans. Another piece that has come out of this was the community health workers who were associated with the mental health project who were coming together and having monthly meetings were really excited about the idea of having some support. So they would come to these monthly meetings, share resources, talk about challenging clients that they were facing, and just sort of general issues that they were having in the community. And when the project ended in 2010, we said, hey, you want to continue these meetings? And they said, yes, absolutely. So we actually opened them up to other folks who were in no way involved with the mental health project, said, hey, anyone's welcome to come now. So they've actually morphed into their own professional association called the Louisiana Community Health Outreach Network. There is a presentation tomorrow. If you're interested in learning more about that, please come. And in terms of some of the capacity that's been built, the chair of this network is now a community PI of a new NIH-funded community-based participatory research project that's focusing on intimate partner violence. So this network has been able to support her in achieving that role. And some of our project outcomes have actually gone beyond just the scope of Louisiana, which we also feel very excited about. So some of the program training materials that we use to train community health workers and primary care providers and all these folks have been adapted and used elsewhere. So specifically in Los Angeles, some of our partners there have used these materials in their partnered work with academics and communities, which is exciting. And then in addition, there is a new SAMHSA and HRSA-funded project that's going on right now at four sites in Texas where behavioral health-focused community health workers are being integrated into primary care. And a lot of the materials that we use to train our community health workers have been adapted and are now being used for that project. If you're interested in learning more about that, there's a poster at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, and more than welcome to come learn about that. And that's it. So I guess we'll save questions until the end. And I want to thank Ben and all of our project partners who were involved in the MPET project.
Thank you, Ashley.